Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You are listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We hear every day about the influence and activities of Arab radicals, but what about Arab moderates? There is today and always has been a center in Arab politics, a group of people convinced that compromise will lead to peace with Israel and throughout the region. But for many average Arabs living in poverty, the message of moderates is often drowned out by the passion and promises of radical clerics who tap into the frustrations of people who feel otherwise powerless against the oppression and deprivation they have suffered. So what will it take for moderate thinkers, those seeking resolution to conflict rather than escalation of conflict, to gain influence? My guest this hour has considered that question throughout his political career. Marwan Muasher served in a variety of positions in the Jordanian government, including deputy prime minister, ambassador to the United States, and Jordan's first ambassador ever to the State of Israel. He writes about his work in his new book, The Arab Center, The Promise of Moderation. Marwan, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
How do you define the Arab Center?
Well, I make the argument that the Arab political center is a center that believes in moderation, that believes in pursuing objectives through peaceful means, that believes in peaceful coexistence between Arabs and Israelis, but also a center that should believe in political reform and good governance and should not only focus its activities on one issue only, which is the peace process, but it extends its moderation to other issues of importance to Arab society.
Yeah, one reason for that is that you say the center is a position that grows weaker all the time in the Arab world.
It is, and the principal reason is that this center is a one-issue center. This center has focused all its energy on the peace process, and despite its valiant efforts, and I argue and show in the book that all of the initiatives to solve the Arab-Israeli conflict in this decade has come from the Arab Center, whether it is the Arab Peace Initiative in 2002 or the roadmap in 2003, have all come from the Arab Center. But despite these valiant efforts, because the peace process has not come to a conclusion, and because the other issues, good governance, political reform, economic well-being, were not even addressed by the Center, today the Center has nothing to show for its efforts. And today the radical elements in Arab society point out to this and say, well, if moderation does not work, perhaps violence will.
You have identified three groups in political Islam. Can you talk about what they are?
Sure. I think political Islam, particularly in the West, is often seen by the average person as monolithic, when in fact there are at least three groups. One is an exclusionist group, a group that is at war not just with the West, but with the whole world. These are the Al-Qaeda type group who are not interested in compromise, not interested in dialogue, are against everybody who does not believe in their deviant form of Islam. And therefore, this is a group that has to be fought and a group with which no compromise is possible. At the same time, this is only the very small group in political Islam in the region. The second group is a group that has come about because of the occupation in their countries. This is Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in the Palestinian occupied territories. These are people who also employ violent means, but who are increasingly coming to the political process through their respective parliaments. Hezbollah is a member of the Lebanese parliament. Hamas is a member of the Palestinian parliament. And then you have the third group, a group which has always been peaceful, which has always carried their objectives through peaceful means, the Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan, the Islamic parties in Morocco and elsewhere. And what I argue is that we need to encourage the second group to migrate to the third, in other words, give up arms and be a political force only while we continue to fight with the first one.
Is there a corresponding Israeli center that faces similar challenges at home?
Absolutely. If you look at Israeli society, then in the 90s, when hopes for peace were higher, you could say that the Israeli center were very much on the rise against the radicals, the right-wing governments and parties of the Likud and parties to the religious parties to the right of the Likud. The Labour Party in the 90s was the dominant party. Rabin was the prime minister. Later, Ehud Barak was there too, because also of the failure of the peace process, because of the rise in radicalism on both sides, the Israeli society has veered to the right as well. And today, the Labour Party has lost its majority of the last decade. And today, also, the existing government in Israel is a minority government and will probably be replaced in any election by a right-wing government.
Marwan Muasher is my guest. He is former Deputy Prime Minister of Jordan, former Ambassador of Jordan to the United States, and the first Jordanian ambassador to Israel. His book is called The Arab Center, The Promise of Moderation. Marwan, it is really unusual for an Arab politician to write a book, especially a high-level politician, maybe unprecedented to write that book and publish it first in English. What made you decide to talk about your sort of behind-the-scenes work in diplomacy and in the Jordanian government?
Arab politicians, as you correctly stated, do not usually write or document their experiences in office. And of those who do, very few do it in English. The result has been that the history of the area has been largely written by outsiders, whether it is people from the West or sometimes Israelis, but seldom from Arabs. And as such, I think I felt a very strong need to document some of the experiences of Arab moderates and Arab moderation to a Western audience who tends to think or focus only on Arab extremism and is not many times aware of the existence of Arab moderates and what they have done. The book will be translated into Arabic, however, because I think that the message of the need for political reform in the book also needs to be heard by Arab society, and therefore, in a couple of months, we will also have an Arab version.
Is the response of the Western audience different to what you have to say than it was when you were working in an official capacity for the Jordanian government?
When I was working, I think that hopes for peace were much higher than they are today. And there was a time when initiatives were put on the table and where negotiations were taking place between the two parties and where really chances for a successful conclusion to these negotiations were very high. Today, that is not the case. What I'm arguing is that in the last, 5 years or so, radicalism, largely because of the absence of conflict, but also because of the absence of focus on part of the Arab moderates on political reform, radicalism is on the rise. And the point I'm trying to make is that unless we understand that and unless we understand the need to solve the Arab-Israeli conflict and solve it very quickly, I'm afraid that the West will have to deal with radicalism in the region for the foreseeable future.
Let's talk about your work as ambassador to Israel, because I think people need to understand that this required a great deal of compromise for you. This was not an easy decision to make for you, either personally or politically.
No, even though I was Jordan's spokesman to the peace talks and I had dealt with Israelis as such for a number of years, taking the leap of faith, if you will, to go and live there took a lot of internal struggle. When King Hussein asked me at the end of 94 to do that, I truly went through probably the most difficult week in my life, where neither my family, my friends, my community in Jordan wanted me to go, and I had to really search deep into my soul to make that leap of faith. And I talk about that, and I talk about other anecdotes. The time that I attended Israel's Independence Day, which to all Arabs, including myself, was the anniversary of the tragedy of the Nakba, of the loss of Palestine in 48.
So it's essentially a day of mourning for Arabs.
Absolutely, a day of mourning for the last 60 years. And so the point I want to make is that if we are to reach a peaceful settlement in the Middle East, then both sides' dreams cannot be mutually exclusive, and both sides have to let go of some of their past and look for a better future. If we keep mired in the past, both Arabs and Israelis, then a peaceful settlement will not be possible.
What changed about your perspective when you were serving in Israel, and what sort of compromises were you willing to make or to encourage other Arabs to make after you had lived and worked there?
Well, some of the first issues that struck me was the feeling of insecurity on part of the average Israeli. And that was new to me, because for all Arabs. Arabs feel very insecure because of the Israeli military machine, because Israel won, you know, all the wars that it had with Arabs. And so Arabs feel that their security is being violated by the existence of Israel. When I went there, I found out that the opposite is also true, that the average Israeli also is worried about his or her own security because of their presence in a big Arab neighborhood. And I think that that is a vital issue to be understood by both parties, that unless they are able to address each other's security problems, we might not have peace come to the region. That is, for example, one of the principal concepts behind the Arab Peace Initiative that we put forward in 2002, where the security of Israel will not be guaranteed just by the Palestinians, but by all Arab states, all 22 members of the Arab League, in an attempt to address not only Arab needs, but Israeli needs, and be able to, through that, reach the painful compromises that we both have to go through.
Let's refresh people's memories, if they don't recall, about the Arab Peace Initiative of 2002. It is, for one thing, a sort of a pan-Arabic solution, as opposed to simply something that goes to the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Absolutely. The concept there was that peace between Israel and the Palestinians will not guarantee either Israeli security or a Palestinian state, for that matter, that is viable and that is sustainable. And what the Arabs attempted to do in the Arab Peace Initiative is to address not only their needs through the establishment of a two-state solution and the return of Arab land, but also to address Israeli needs. And I think they did that very successfully through offering Israel four basic needs that it needed. One, a collective peace treaty, again, not between Israel and Arab states neighboring Israel, but between Israel and all members of the Arab League. Two, security guarantees, again, for all states in the region, including Israel, by all 22 members of the Arab League. Three, an end to the conflict and no more claims, so that no Arab country or individual would claim anything beyond 1967 borders. And the most important is an agreed solution to the refugee problem, therefore assuring Israel that the solution to the refugee problem is not going to mean the return of 4 or 5 million Palestinians into Israel and challenging its demographic nature. These are the principal pillars behind the Arab Peace Initiative. And I think that today they constitute a very solid foundation for peace that will take place, again, not between just the Palestinians and the Israelis, but between the Israelis and the whole region.
Are you confident that if the initiative had gone through, or if it did go through in the future in some similar form, that it would silence the voices and the violence on the part of radicals who have been fighting against Israel for so long now?
Absolutely. If you look at a separate peace treaty today between Israel and the Palestinians, then the radicals will have a large say in undermining this kind of a peace treaty. Hamas is going to be a major player if the treaty is only between Israel on one hand and a Palestinian authority on the other, where Hamas is at least half of that authority. But if you look at the situation where Israel signs a peace treaty between itself and the whole Arab world, then in such a context, Hamas is a very minor player, and I dare say also Iran, which is not a member of the Arab League, but which